Hello, this is Martin Willis. Out of roughly something like 108 billion people that have ever lived on this planet, only 12 of them have actually walked on the moon to this date. Hopefully that'll change in the future soon. It would be nice. My guest that I spoke with back in 2010 is the fourth person to have walked on the moon. Astronaut Alan Bean. I interview him about his artwork, but we do get into topics about the moon, what it was like, moon rocks, moon conspiracies, all that. Unfortunately, Alan passed away back in 2018. This interview I'm releasing now on March 15th, 2021, which is would have been Alan's 89th birthday. Alan left a wonderful legacy of beautiful paintings, incredible work that he did. And I hope you get a chance to check out his website. It's still up, alanbean.com. Anyway, I hope you like this interview half as much as I liked doing it with Alan. Hi everyone, this is Martin.
And Phyllis.
And we have an interesting guest today.
Very interesting.
I think this will be perhaps our only guest that ever walked on the moon, don't you think?
I'm going to make a bet that, yeah, that's probably right.
Yes, we have Alan Bean on the other line. How you doing, Alan?
I'm doing good here in Houston, Texas. Nice weather and glad to be on your podcast.
That's great.
Thank you so much.
Yes, we're really happy to have you. Now, Alan is an extremely talented artist, and the reason I know this is I happened to be watching the History Detectives the other week and saw Alan on there and saw his artwork, and so I got right on the computer, and I was lucky enough to have him agree to join us today. So, Alan, can you tell us a little bit about your paintings?
Well, I was an astronaut for 18 years and was lucky enough to be the fourth man to walk on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
My hobby had been art before I was came as an astronaut. When I was a Navy test pilot, I enrolled in night school and took drawing and watercolor because I just liked it, enjoyed art. And through the years, I did that. I did it at NASA, took from Museum of Fine Arts, night school, things like that, just as a hobby. And then when I had returned from Skylab, which was my second mission in NASA, and I was training to fly the space shuttle, as commander of the space shuttle, I said, you know, there's a lot of young men and women around here that can fly the space shuttle as good as I can or better. But there's no one that got to go to the moon of the 12 of us that would be interested in recording that great adventure, great human adventure in fine art. We have it in we have it in TV, we have it in movies, we have it in still photographs, we have it in words, but not in fine art. So I said, maybe if I could learn to be a better artist, I could do that, and it would be a worthwhile thing to do and leave some stories behind about this great first adventure of humans off this earth that would otherwise be available to future generations. So that's why I'm an artist, and that's what I do.
It's very inspiring that you're a man of vision. What medium do you use nowadays? Is it watercolor that we see on your online gallery?
No, it's acrylic, and the reason I picked acrylic is one of the things that's a rule of art is art should be of its time. And so I was doing the most advanced technical art, you know, subject that there was or
is. Right.
And acrylics are the technology of this time. Your car is acrylic. If your oils were have been in use for 400 years, and I've painted with them, I love them. Watercolor is even longer than that. All of them are good mediums, but the best, as far as holding color and not cracking and all that sort of stuff mm-hmm. is are acrylics. So I picked acrylics for that reason alone, because I wanted my art to be of its time.
Mm-hmm.
I really love your artwork, by the way, and I was looking at your work, and I noticed there was some real texture to it. Is that like, do you do that in layers or something? Is that what I'm seeing?
What you're seeing, first of all, over the years, I've always liked paintings that had texture.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a number of years of painting, trying to learn to create images that looked realistic, that I liked, I began to want to add texture to those images. And so I started adding them using the same tools that artists have used over the years, palette knives, end of brushes, fingers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I said, you know, why am I using these earth tools? I've got some tools from the moon that mm-hmm. I could use in my painting that would make a more be more significant to what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I had some moon boots. Mm-hmm. I had some.
Uh-huh.
I had the hammer I had on the moon.
Okay.
I had a little Cortou bit that I drove into the moon. Was supposed to just throw it away, but I put it in my pocket. And so I ended up using those tools in the foundation of the painting. And when I start a painting, I cut some. I actually don't use canvas. I use plywood that you rake. Make real airplanes out of, not the 747, but you make, you know, some of these sport airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from Scandinavia and has about 16 layers. You can't buy it. You can't even buy it anywhere in Houston. I have to order it special.
Mm-hmm.
But that way it's connected to aviation in some way. Then I put a mm-hmm. texturing material on there, and then I use my moon boots and sort of walk across the painting, where the painting will be, use my hammer, make little marks that look good, use my core tube, and then once that's done, I have to sand it and carve it a little bit, and it takes about 3 days to make the base, and then once I've got this base with moon boots in it and all that other, then I do the painting over it.
Wow. Boy, that's a really an original method. That's great. That's great. So they actually let you keep the moon boots. Do they let you keep other things too?
Not exactly. Not exactly. For example, I've got some gloves here that I wore on Skylab. They're on loan from the Air and Space Museum.
Oh.
And so I've got them. I'm looking at them right now.
Mm.
But when I'm dead and gone, I'm using them down here. They've got others. Then they go back to the Air and Space Museum up in Washington.
Uh-huh.
So as long as I don't, you know, I keep them in good condition, then I can use it. Those moon boots are some that were used in training,
uh-huh.
so they're not like they're the same ones on the moon. We left ours on the moon because we had to offload as much weight as we could.
Oh, sure.
So we could bring back more weight in rocks.
Uh-huh.
So my gloves are up there.
Hmm.
My backpack is up there. My Hasselblad camera, all those things.
Wow.
Anything we could leave behind that we didn't need for the rest of the mission, we did. And then that allowed us to bring back more rocks. So that's where these impressions come from. Now, when I started doing this some 8 years after I'd really been left NASA and painted, because it didn't dawn on me to do this till then, like I explained, I had always wanted some moon dust to sprinkle in my painting.
Oh, cool.
But they never gave us a rock or anything like that. So I didn't have any moon dust, I thought. And so one day I was looking up at a plaque on the wall, a frame plaque that they did give me, which had my flag from my suit and the Apollo 12 image and the NASA medallion, things like that from my spacesuit that I wore on the Ocean of Storms. And I was looking at them and I was thinking, boy, they're dirty. Maybe I ought to have them cleaned. And I thought, well, they're dirty with moon dust from the Ocean of Storms. Admittedly, not much,
mm-hmm.
but enough to make them dirty. And so I said, you know, if I'm willing to cut those things up and put them in the paintings, I will then have moon dust in the paintings. Not much, not an amount you could weigh, but but certainly there is dust in there. So that's what I've done.
Oh, my God.
Those flags and NASA patches, I'd say about two-thirds of them are gone now.
Wow.
So I look at the flag, for example, it's dirty with moon dust, but all I've only got the side with the stars, and the last row of stars is even cut off. So I don't have a lot in the NASA emblem. Only the N is visible. ASA is in painting somewhere. So that's kind of what I've done over the years. And so each painting has this texture, and then it also has pieces of my emblem that I won my spacesuit on the moon and dust from the ocean of storms.
Wow.
Isn't that something? Well, the stuff is dirty anyway, so.
Yeah, that's right. Who wants it? She needs it.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that you're of Scottish descent and you took some McBean tartan to the moon with you. Is that right?
Well, that's true. You discover when you are going to the moon that you get letters and packages from all over the place.
Oh.
And so here comes a package that said, you know, I knew that my history was, I didn't know it very well, but I knew that my ancestors were named MacBean and came over from Scotland as indentured servant. One man, John Bean was his name, John MacBean.
Mm-hmm.
But on the ship coming over, the purser didn't want to write MacBean. He wrote Bean. And so he shows up in New Hampshire, and there he is, and then that's a great ancestor of mine, apparently, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody knew that they sent me some MacBean tartan.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut off a piece of it, maybe a yard of it, put it in my personal preference kit, and I took it to the moon, brought it home, and then I sent a big piece of it to a church over in Scotland that is, I guess, what you'd call the traditional Bean, MacBean church,
mm-hmm.
where they keep all the archives.
Mm-hmm.
But most of it is in a safety deposit box. I'm not sure what to do with it. But that's kind of what happened. I took a flag from the University of Texas, and I took one from Pascal High School, my high school, and I, you know, when I got home, I framed them and then presented them to those institutions. So you do a lot of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone ask you to leave something on the moon?
Oh, yes. People asked me to do a lot of things. Some things we could do and some things we couldn't. For example, I replaced an astronaut by the name of C.C. Williams,
mm-hmm.
who got killed in an airplane accident some months before I joined the crew.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And so we took he was a Marine officer, we took his wings up there and left them on the moon.
Wow.
But I didn't leave things for other people up there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to figure out a way to do this correctly, and no one knows the rules. You just have to sort of try to do the right thing. That's sometimes hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, you're person number four on the moon. It's not really like there's a tradition. So getting back to your art a little bit, we've only seen art in the galleries, and we've only talked about, obviously, NASA-related or moon-related art. Is there any art that you do that isn't directly representative of NASA and the moon?
Well, I had to do a lot of art in my learning phase because the teachers knew how to do other kind of art, and they didn't know how to do space art.
Sure.
So whenever I was in a class, then I would do what the students did. Maybe we did paintings of vases of flowers, or we went out sky and did Arizona landscapes or whatever it was in the classes.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a lot of that, but I was always trying to get over to space art. And let me tell you, by the way, I've done several pictures for my own home. One very large painting that I did, like my favorite artist, which is Claude Monet,
mm-hmm.
and it's water lilies. I used a different design. I didn't copy any of his paintings, but I made a big painting that used his techniques,
mm-hmm.
and it looks very beautiful. In fact, I'm sure if Claude Monet came by, he'd say, that looks pretty good. I do it a little better, but it looks pretty good. It looks just like my stuff. So I do things that, but I soon realized that I was the only artist in all of history, of all the paintings you've ever seen in your life or any of your listeners have ever seen. They were done by people that had seen the earth and then interpreted it in their own way. And I was the only human ever, and now I'll still be the first. Someday it'll be many, many artists that live on the moon and will paint it. But I am the first artist ever to go to another world and experience it and come back to Earth to paint it. So I need to tell the story that I know about that as opposed to any story that Earth artists can tell. And many of them can tell it a lot better than I could. But no one can tell this story that I tell better than I am.
Sure, sure.
You're absolutely right.
One thing I always would think of, if I were to land on a moon, no matter what I was landing in, I'd always be worried that I wasn't going to get off the moon. Is that on your mind at all when you're on the moon?
It is in a way, because you know that from, you know, the first time you join as an astronaut, you're hoping to go to the moon. You realize that the moon machines, the lunar modules, the command modules are built by humans. Humans aren't perfect, so their machines aren't perfect. And, of course, the flight after ours, Apollo 13, we were Apollo 12, it did have a human failure problem.
Right.
And so we knew that, and you have to be willing to accept that risk. And in order to do the job, you've got to be able to put it out of your mind to the extent that it would interfere with the job you'd have to do. It's much the same, I believe, that football players realize they can be injured and hurt in playing a game, and indeed they do, but still they say we don't concentrate on that. We try to play the best we can, and we just count on the fact that we won't be, even though we know we could be. So that was generally the mentality of an astronaut. They're willing to take the chance, and they've learned through the years of flying airplanes and being a test pilot, as I was, how to do dangerous things and keep your focus on the job at hand, as opposed to be saying, oh my goodness, I could get killed here.
Sure.
If you start thinking that thought, which I've never had go through my head ever, then and I've done a lot of things where I could get killed right here, you just have to develop that skill. It's almost like a quarterback at the last 2 minutes of the Super Bowl. He can't be thinking about anything except the next play and how he's going to get that ball across the goal line or whatever it is.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense. We'll get back to you, Art, but I just have one more question. What was it like to stand on the moon and look up at Earth? I mean, that is that just beyond words?
Well, I don't know if it's beyond words or not, but it is very science fiction when you're doing it. I mean, you're there and you're saying, I was saying, this is the moon. That is the Earth. It was hard to believe. It was true. I knew it was true. I was standing there looking at it, but still, it seemed so improbable and impossible up till, you know, we actually did it 4 months before, back in 1969. Neil and Buzz were on the moon in July, and we went in November, Pete Conrad and I. And so it has a kind of a surreal quality to it from the point of view that these things were impossible ever since we were born, and we knew that when we were little kids, and we knew it as we grow up, and we knew it when we were young men, and finally we said, well, we're going to try to do this. We're going to do this. So it's kind of amazing to us even. And I think that's one of the reasons there's not good descriptions of the feelings is because they were so impossible to believe yourself, even though you're doing it. And mm-hmm. so, as I say, I would be saying, you know, this is the moon. I'd look down at my blueprint. This is the moon. And I'd look up and I'd say, that is the Earth. I'll tell you this, it's 239,000 miles away. That's a long, long way.
Yeah.
And you have to hope that the people put your rocket together correctly.
Jeez.
The little old ladies that sewed up your space suit, they did a good job. Your neck is way out when you go on a space mission. You know things can go wrong. You just are saying, this is worth, to me, the risk, and I just hope nothing goes wrong that can't be fixed or that would be fatal. So you know that, but you don't think about it very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last question I have for you about the moon, has anyone ever confronted you about this silly moon conspiracy thing?
Oh, sure. People do it. They usually say things like, I've got an aunt that doesn't believe you went to the moon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm a believer in letting people be who they want to be. If they don't want to believe, go, it's okay, it doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
They don't believe it, well, I'm tell your aunt good luck, or tell your aunt that, you know, hold on to that belief. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just not the way I see it, and not the way I remember it, but it's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. I would never, ever try to convince her otherwise. You were talking earlier about watching this thing on History Channel about what it was. Is a group wanted to come over and show me this little medallion, little mm-hmm. square little medallion,
right?
And talk about it. I says, "Well, okay." They came over and they said, "Now look, there's some images on here from I forget if it was six or eight or some." Earth artists, Andy Warhol,
right.
And some of the other famous ones. You know, the whole little chip was maybe an inch square. I don't remember exactly, but something like that. They said, and they claim it went up. Somebody in the factory, who we don't know, by the way, who they didn't know who it was, put it on Apollo 12, and it flew to the moon. So it's up there, and it's the first art gallery. I said, that's interesting. First of all, I never heard of it in my life, okay? That's one.
Mm-hmm.
And two, maybe somebody could have done something like that. I said, but I will bet you it didn't happen because we didn't hire anybody that would have taken a chance to put some strange object on the lunar module that would go to the moon, that might cause a problem.
Yeah.
I said, you do not know. That thing could have come loose and gone through a window and let the pressure out of the limb. You don't know. I said, I do not believe we had people that would do that. And I said, not only that, what would be their motivation?
Right.
What is their motivation? Are they going to make a profit from it? Are they going to become famous from it? Are they sending people? We believe people would, on the side of the limb when they were putting it together, before they put the foil on, they might write their name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Or they might write the name of their children on it or something like that, because it doesn't hurt anything. It's just ink
mm-hmm.
on metal. We know that doesn't do anything. So I'm sure that if we went to the limb up there on the moon right now, if we could, on the Ocean of Storms, we could find some names written here and there, or good mm-hmm. luck, or Godspeed to the moon, a lot of things like they do. I do not believe that that little thing went with us, and I think somebody in present day has a motive to show that for some reason, maybe
mm-hmm.
get on TV or something, you
yeah.
know?
Mm-hmm.
So I personally don't believe it, but, you know, I don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering about that and how it could end up on eBay.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
There's an answer. If the guy's selling it, there you go. There's a motive to lie. People
yeah.
lie all the time.
Yeah.
I had a guy This was on eBay too, but the FBI got them before I did.
I didn't try
to get them. I don't even look on eBay, but they called me up and they said, this guy's selling this big rock that supposedly you brought back from Apollo 12. I said, look, why would I give a rock to some guy? If I had a rock, which I don't, leaving a little, I'd give it to me. And if I didn't give it to me, I'd give it to my wife, or I'd give it to my son, or daughter, or my aunt, or uncle.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't give it to somebody you never even heard of.
Yeah.
And I said, we didn't have any rocks we brought back. They all belong to NASA and the government.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, I don't even have one myself. So I run into this, by the way, frequently. I'll meet somebody at a speech or something. They'll say, my uncle has got a big moon rock. I said, I'll say this. Well, did he? Where'd you get it? Oh, I don't know. He got it from one of the astronauts. He knew him because he used to eat at his restaurant. I said, really?
Oh.
I said, well, what size is it? And then they maybe show me a baseball size, you know, in their hands.
Mm.
I said, well, where's the rock now? It's in a safety deposit box.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure that guy believes he has a moon rock, but I can tell you he does not have any moon rocks.
Yeah.
They know where every fraction of an ounce of moon rocks are.
Mm.
I'm sure. I don't think you'll see them on eBay either.
Yeah.
Well, the FBI got those guys, see. I said to the FBI guy who called me up and talked with me about it, I said he made a fundamental mistake. He should have claimed that one of the guys is dead already. Three of us are dead.
Mm.
That's who brought it to him. Al Shepard gave it to him. Because Al Shepard's dead.
Mm-hmm.
You can, I'm sure after I'm dead and gone, there's no telling what they'll claim I brought to who. And I won't be around to say I didn't bring anything like that to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you have it here on tape now, so.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll protect
that
you.
That won't deter people, but
yeah.
It's good that we did.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, hey, where would someone find your paintings? Are you in a gallery? Do you have your own gallery?
In a way, I do. I have two websites.
Mm-hmm.
One called AlanBeanGallery.com. Which is very nice, AlanBeanGallery, AlanBeanGallery.com, where all the work that I do and some other things are on. It's maintained by some friends of mine in Australia. It's their site, really, but it's that. People could go there and look and see my work if they wanted to. But if they're thinking about buying a painting, they would need to go to AlanBean.com, AlanBean.com,
mm-hmm.
and then look through there. It tells the story of how the paintings are made and things like that. And then it has a thing under there, one of the drop downs where you can see what available originals are for sale.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have very many for sale. I've been working on commissions mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's several big ones that I did on my own, and they're for sale, but they're pretty expensive, but they're beautiful, I'll say that.
Mm.
So people can look around and think about these paintings. I think these paintings will be around long, long after I'm gone. Not
mm-hmm.
because I'm a great artist, but because they're the first art of a world other than the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so I'm imagining that in the future that people will retain them for that value. And someday when they have art galleries on the moon, and they will, then they'll go up and discover some of these paintings and hang them in that art gallery.
I bet they will.
Of course, they'll only weigh 1/6 as much, so that's
yeah.
a good deal.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, look, I've got to get back to painting instead of talking
yes.
about
okay.
it.
Well, we've had
enjoyed being on your podcast very much.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, yeah. You've been wonderful and very interesting. You're one of our favorite guests.
Well, thank you very much. Proud to have been with you.
All right. All right. Well, thank you very much. This is Martin Willis.
And Phyllis Goh.
With Alan Bean, the astronaut, signing, and artist, that is, signing off.